we're still alive.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that you had to be outside the whole time, Dave.
I was at the door.
Oh, were you listening?
Yeah.
Good. Did you hear all the jokes? It was so funny. Wow. So I just got done interviewing Trace Beaulieu from Mystery Science Theater 3000, Other Space, Cinematic Titanic, America's Funniest Home Videos, your childhood, your inner comedy conscience. Yeah. Crow T Robot just called and we just had like an hour long conversation. And what a fucking generous, like, individual. Jesus Christ. I mean, well, this is just a not safe for work episode now. But just what a nice guy. Like, we got to talk about sort of, you know, Mystery Science Theater, obviously a little bit of that. I didn't want to touch on it too much because actually his career is pretty illustrious. He's pretty prolific and has done a lot of writing for different TV shows, but he's also an author. He has a book out called Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children that you can find on Amazon. You can find it at tracebeaulieu.com. He's currently touring with Frank from Mystery Science Theater, so TV's Frank, as you know him, and they are traveling with The Mads Are Back, which is a live two-person show. They're not in character as the Mads, but it is Frank and it is Trace who played the Mads for Mystery Science Theater. They're doing a live tour. They'll be in Austin in a couple weeks. There's more details at the end of the episode where Trace is actually giving you all the info, and I'll have all the dates linked in the podcast post on the website. But it's really cool that after 20 years of being a fan of his, I was able to sit down and have a conversation with him. I was extremely nervous beforehand. Morgan and Dave can attest to that. But he's such a nice, cool, normal guy. And I think that his perspective on sort of how he's navigated his career was really great. We got to talk about sort of how Mystery Science Theater went from KTMA to a major network like Comedy Central, how he sort of bypassed the traditional publishing framework to put out his book Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children, sort of how he's been able to be a part of Paul Feig's continuing career, including, you know, Freaks and Geeks, but then also the amazingly brilliant Yahoo show Other Space that you guys should watch if you haven't seen it yet. So we cover a lot of stuff. It's a really kind of jam-packed hour, but I actually really, it was great. Like, it was just such a, I have no words anymore. So,
I'm super excited to be welcoming back a returning sponsor for season two of Super Hungry, the podcast, Geek World Order. This is an awesome website, you guys. Tons of nerdy stuff. It's got reviews on movies, music, TV shows. It's got tons of articles and all the nerdy news to keep yourself in the loop. You can check them out on Facebook by searching Geek World Order and at geekworldordersite.com. Geek World Order, where geeks unite. Super Hungry, the podcast, is thrilled to be welcoming a brand new sponsor to the show. I am so excited to be telling you guys about LuLaRoe. You probably heard about it. You've probably seen somebody on your Facebook having a group about it. And I'm really not into many of those things. I always support my friends when they're in it and I will join their groups. But this is the first one where I've actually actively like hounded somebody to be a sponsor because their clothes are that adorable. It is a boutique shop that was started by a mom, a working mom, who just really wanted an outlet for cute clothes that were comfortable, but also very, like, practical and wearable. And so the dresses are adorably waisted, but they've got nice cap sleeves. And, you know, the leggings are awesome. They come in all these amazing prints. And one of my lovely friends is actually heading her own boutique. My friend Liz Cones has her own boutique with her wonderful guy ZL. They just had an adorable baby, so they have really dug in and they've launched their own business. So you can find them on Facebook at their boutique, which is how you order LuLaRoe. I don't know if you guys know that. It's always a pop-up boutique. You do it through like Google Docs. It's actually like a really easy order form, but they do these little pop-up boutiques online once a month with their new product. And I am super excited. So I will definitely be posting photos with all the shit that I've gotten because I can't wait to wear it. So check them out by searching LuLaRoe, which is LuLaRoe, all one word. And then search LuLaRoe, ZL, and Liz. And you will find their group where you can be added and check out all their pop-up stuff. Also, we are really honored, and by we, I mean, of course, the royal we of my brain. We are really honored to have back our graphic designer, my graphic designer, Sydney Landis. She has done the new banner, and she did the promotional logos and all the cute little designs for the new season. So I'm really excited about that, and I love her style so much. And so I just wanted to tell you guys a little bit about her. You can Google her at Sydney Landis. That's SYDNEYLANDIS, and you can find her. She's got she's like on Tumblr, she's on Instagram, and yeah, she's amazing. I'm going to be posting a bunch of her art on the website so you can see, and I'll be posting links to where you can buy her art online later as well. So if you need anybody to do graphic design for you, logo design, just illustration, she's incredible and very talented, and did all the kick-ass logos for Super Hungry. Check her out. We're doing that thing again where I film the intro monologue like right after it's happened, so I'm a little bit keyed up, you guys. I gotta go eat some pizza, hold a cat, and calm down. So I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Trace Beaulieu. Hello?
Hey, is this Virginia?
Yes. Hi, Trace. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Would it have been weird if it wasn't Virginia?
It would be.
I mean, it would have been cool, I guess, if I would have had an assistant. Damn it. I should have had Morgan, my engineer, answer. God, Morgan, next time, have the ideas. How are you? How's your Sunday?
It's going well.
Yeah?
What part of the country are you in?
I'm in L.A., Los Angeles, for short.
L.A., okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if you were in New York. They're having a heat wave.
Oh, no, it's always hot out here, too. So, like, anytime New York feels it, I'm always like, no, we have, like, mostly sun all year round. So, yeah, it's pretty hot. Yeah. I'm in the Valley, too. I don't know if you know anything about the Valley, but there's a lot of, like, drugs and sun out here, mostly.
Yeah, I used to live in Los Angeles. But only for about 11 years, so...
Oh, so not, like, the longest time ever. You only... Where in L.A. did you live?
I lived over near Hancock Park.
Oh, cool.
That La Brea area.
What was, like, the cross? La Brea and what?
Beverly... actually lived at Citrus.
Okay, yeah. I know exactly where that is.
Yeah, Hancock Park adjacent.
But you're in Minneapolis, right?
Well, I'm east of Minneapolis. I'm actually in a pretty small town. There are supposedly only 600 people in this town.
Excellent. That's cool. I mean, are there any, like, ghosts along with the humans? Or is it just, like, a pretty run-of-the-mill 600 people?
It's actually a very interesting town. There's a lot of film people here. A lot of artists, writers. It's a very liberal in its views.
That's cool.
But then the community, I think immediately to the, or the county immediately to the east of us, was Michelle Bachmann country.
It's a good mix. It's a good mix, like anywhere in the Midwest.
We all look around going, okay, who likes her? Why did that happen?
I don't know if you had a chance to sort of listen to any of the episodes before, but it's totally cool if you haven't. Not even all of, I don't think Morgan's even heard all of them, and he's engineered a lot of them. So, but basically the premise of the show, the long title is Super Hungry Conversations with Not So Starving Artists. And so really what I wanted to set out to do with the podcast, and
I don't know if you remember this, but we actually met, you know, 2 years back at Pensacon, and it's an awesome little Comic-Con in Pensacola, Florida. We chatted, and I had actually mentioned that I was starting a podcast, and it's funny because I actually did it. I, like, followed through, and I was really excited that I was able to, you know, contact you, and thank you, first of all, for agreeing to be on the show. I'm sure you hear it quite often, but your work in particular, you know, Mystery Science Theater, but also, you know, Cinematic Titanic, you know, your work as an author, actually, you know, I have your, I have Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children. It's like really, I'm actually excited to start reading it to my nephew when he's like a little bit older. I just have been such a fan for such a long time. So the fact that you're on the show means a lot, but you're actually, your life and your career is very sort of in line with the theme of the show and sort of that of a working artist, the narrative of someone who has continued working their whole life at their craft and sort of, you know, one of the things I like to explore is kind of like the ups and the downs, because I think that there are a lot of listeners to the podcast that can really relate to moments of, you know, maybe it being a low before a high, or, you know, stories of trying to make it and then making it. And that's what you did. And so I guess if it's cool, I'd like to maybe like start at the beginning, which is sort of like, you know, where are you born? What do your parents do? Like, what, you know, what was that whole thing?
Well, I was born in Minneapolis and grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis. Was pretty small townish. You know, you could ride your bike to the movie theater.
Nice.
My grade school was only two blocks from my house. But I didn't know that until I was in like sixth grade, because they picked us up at the corner in a bus and drove us, you know, miles to get to school. And it was only later I realized, hey, I could just walk.
Oh, because you were like on the beginning of the bus route or something?
Yeah, we were on the, and it took forever to get to school.
That's hilarious.
Finally dawned on me. It's like, but then they tore that school down.
Right in time for you to walk there.
Yes. My junior high school was torn down. Well, actually, no, it was converted into elder housing, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And my high school was converted into a community center. So it's like I left all these buildings.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, am I right? Like,
yeah, exactly. They were no longer suited for education. They realized, oh, we failed so miserably with this person. So what else can we do with this building?
We're like, let's not get him at the beginning. Let's catch him at the end. Let's go for the opposite end of this Benjamin Button spectrum. Well, so are you still in contact with like everyone from your hometown? Like, do you still sort of like stay involved with people from that area? Obviously Minneapolis is not a small hamlet or anything. I'm sure where you're living now is kind of smaller, but do you still have, you know, strong ties to Minneapolis?
I have strong ties to the people I met doing stand up in the 80s.
Okay.
In Minneapolis. And that's where I met everybody involved in Mystery Science.
Right, because Joel had come back from L.A. and stuff, right?
Right, yeah. Met Frank and Josh and Mike Nelson and Mary Jo Peel and Bridget Nelson and all those guys. Actually, didn't meet Joel until much later, later in the 80s. Met all those other guys first. But it was a great, you know, that was sort of college for me.
Did you study, do like improv or like, I know you did stand-up and stuff, right?
I did a version of stand-up called Crap. I started out doing improv performing, and I liked that a lot better. In fact, one of the little clubs that was in Minneapolis was called the Comedy Cabaret, and that was started by a friend of mine who was actually student teacher in my high school in the drama program.
Oh, cool.
So I kind of followed his career and he had an improv group in this theater, and I eventually joined that. And then the stand-up comedy boom broke, and everyone realized they could make more money on their own. So our little troupe disbanded, and I tried my hand at stand-up, and it was mostly just to, you know, get out of the house and go on the road and hang out with people that were really cool and really good at it.
Right. Like, hanging out with comedians is, like, the best part of doing stand-up, is really, like, the hanging out at the bar afterward.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I met people like Dana Gould and went on the road with him and saw how that's how it should be done. When Mystery Science came along, that consumed all of my creative needs, or supplied all my creative needs, that I never looked back and never did stand up again.
Yeah, because I heard, you know, obviously I've been a fan of yours for a long time, so I've read and heard other interviews, so I know that, like, you didn't really start doing puppetry, right? That was sort of something that came organically when you got hired for the show, right? It was a thing, because you were hired as a writer first, or as a performer first?
Well, it wasn't even a hire. It was Joel had gotten this show placed. Actually, he knew Jim Mallon, who was working at this KTMA, which was a little rinky-dink television station
access,
in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite that low. It wasn't public access.
It was UHF. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was UHF. It was an actual station. It was just the last rated station in Minneapolis.
Well, you know, there's that.
So, they didn't care so much. They had room to experiment and.
They were pretty cool with, like, letting you guys bring in the, like, original programming. Was their censoring pretty hard, or they're pretty, you know, kind of loose?
Jim sort of had the keys to the studio, and the station owner didn't really know what we were doing. So we started doing the show, and I'd known Josh, and then I'd met Joel through this writing group that we had. And he said, hey, we're doing a show. Why don't you come on over and help? And that was it. That was the audition. That was the hire. Really didn't know what the show was going to be about until we got into the studio. And then it was, well, we're just going to, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the movies that we're watching. And then we quickly realized that we had to fill dead air, and all of us being comics quickly fell back on making jokes. And that's where the riffing started.
That's so cool. I think it's such an organic extension of sort of the natural way that people watch films. So for me, like, I'm sure you hear this all the time, but, like, I started watching Mystery Science Theater when I was about 7 years old, because I caught it when it was on Sci-Fi, once after they had picked it up after Comedy Central had canceled it. And so my sister and I would do Saturday mornings, because they would do, like, an episode or two on Saturday morning. So we would watch, like, our Saturday morning cartoons, and then we'd flip over to Sci-Fi and watch one of the movies. And that was, like, how we would always start our Saturdays. And it always, now that I, you know, growing up with a lot of siblings and stuff, it feels just like such an organic thing to watch. And then I realized, oh, it's organic to me, because, like, so much comedy since you guys came out, you know, has been influenced by the format that Mystery Science Theater has had really set up, was that sort of that meta comedy, the riff on, you know, the sort of being in on the joke, you know. And I think that it's so cool that it, what became such an organic extension of probably what comedians just do anyway, like, is such a thing that so many people can relate to. Do you think that, I mean, I'm sure that that's what played into it getting picked up, but can you talk a little bit about, like, how, like, what was the process from basically going from KTMA to Comedy Central? Because I know that that happened, but I'm just curious, just as someone who also does, like, TV and is in production and does stuff like that, like, from the inside, I'm curious as how that all kind of shook out.
Well, we did about 20 episodes at KTMA, so that was really our pilot season.
Right.
And really a shakedown cruise for the whole concept of the show. Everything really that came after that was sort of put in motion in those first 20 episodes, or 22, depending on who you talk to. I can only remember 20. And out of that, you know, it was all improv. We hadn't seen the films before commenting on them. So, you know, not everything was a hit. You know, not every joke was, you know, funny, to be blunt. So out of 22 episodes, we went through and looked for the best jokes to put a sell tape together. And it was, you know, really the timing with all of this stuff was key to us getting on the air and staying on the air for as long as it was on. But, you know, all the timing, you know, cable had been deregulated. We had just done 22 of these shows. Joel had a relationship with the channel that was just starting. They were hungry for programming. And we were a two-hour show, so we filled a lot of network time while they were still, you know, developing shows and finding out what worked. So we were like spackle. We were network spackle. You know, hey, we've got a time slot at 2 in the morning. Good, put the puppet show in there.
I imagine there's like a guy with like a cigar saying that. Good, put the puppets in.
Yeah. Well, you got any puppets? Put them in there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and that worked to our advantage because the show was discovered to the audience and not rammed down the audience's throat.
Right.
There was no, you know, press to speak of until it was on for, I don't know, maybe a year or so. And then we started getting national press. But it was never like head turning for us.
Right.
None of us had agents and managers and lawyers that would advise us on how we should be playing the game. It was, well, we're just making it up as we go along. We don't know if we're following the rules. We probably aren't. And that's to our advantage.
Yeah, because I feel like you guys got away. I mean, you know, the show is never been crass or really, you know, there's no like hardcore censorship that I feel like would be necessary anyway. But like the things that you guys came up with, I think looking now, obviously we have like things like Adult Swim and, you know, Cartoon Network, you know, these sort of a little bit more subversive things that are happening. But like you guys with some of the sketches early on and even some of the later sketches, like I actually brought this up to you at the convention when we met, because I was at the Q&A, and I had asked you guys what your favorite, you know, sketch was in between, and then it basically was just a reason for me to tell you, like, what mine was, like all Q&As are. But yeah. I was just, the Ingmar Bergman one still sticks out to me as something, because, first of all, let's talk about how long that sketch is. It's like a couple minutes, like full minutes of just like you guys really being brave enough to trust the audience with the payoff of this joke that, like, first of all, you're assuming everybody knows who Ingmar Bergman is. Everybody understands why it's in black and white, why the puppets now have act. You know, you've set up something immediately. But I think that that was what was so brave about the show. And now looking back, and, you know, I always rewatch, or anytime I get like a new box set, I'll, you know, we'll watch the episodes again. And like, I like those moments like that in some of those sketches. I think, you know, just I don't know if those would sell today. Like, I don't know if you'd be able to get away with that same kind of stuff. So what you guys were really doing, like, it still holds true. It's still funny. It's still like weird and subversive today, which is why I think probably, you know, all of the momentum happened, I would say, probably for, you know, the reunion show for Riff Tracks that you guys just did, which I saw in theaters and it was really funny, but also, you know, for the revival on Netflix. I think that it's something that, you know, was among one of the originators of the form and now has become cyclical to the point where it's once again, super relevant in a mainstream way. Like, do you, I have to ask, like, what is it like to be a part of something culturally that's kind of like that? Because like you said, like people, you know, maybe it wasn't like the biggest press in the world, but like, I feel like, you know, since the show has been off air, even the fandom has grown and built and continues to grow. Like, what is that like? I feel like it must be really cool and special.
It's really great. You know, Frank and I do live shows together all around the country, and it's just so gratifying to finally be out of a studio where we didn't get any feedback from, you know, we'd get fan mail and letters, but, you know, to have an audience respond real time to a joke that you wrote is the best experience. You know immediately whether or not what you wrote is funny.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest drug there is. I haven't tried heroin, but I hear it's pretty good.
I mean, they've got good kinds. They've got good kinds.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I think the show has never been bigger or as popular as it is now. It just continues to grow. And like you say, it doesn't grow stale. We run into people all the time at the shows who are either long-term fans and have been there since the beginning, or have just discovered it and love it just as much.
Like, I'm telling you, one of the reasons that I even want to procreate is to show children Mystery Science Theater and Star Wars. So, like, there are a couple things in life, you know, it's like really so that I can just pass on that excitement. Because right now, whenever I have friends that are, you know, that I can introduce to the show, I've realized that I like watch them watching the show for the first couple episodes to make sure that they're like laughing at the parts that they should be laughing at. And, you know, because you got to have smart friends, Trace. If not, they got to go. I think the thing, and you hit on it, but I think one of the things that is the formula, just in terms of breaking down, just to talk about, you know, actual script and comedy writing for a minute, I think what you guys pulled off is sort of these layers of jokes, right? Like, so that kids could watch it and there'd be a joke that would hit them on that sort of like more innocent level. And then there would be sort of a more mature joke maybe for like a teen or tween that they would get. And then there'd be jokes that I honestly wouldn't and didn't get until I would rewatch an episode as an adult, or, you know, learn certain things about politics, or, you know, classic, you know, certain things that you weren't afraid to make jokes that potentially could lose people because you knew that there was an audience that would get them. And I think that always struck me. And I think really when I like, especially now when I'm like writing jokes or scripts or things like that, like I look at what you guys did as something that you included everyone. So it's like this like layered cake where like, if you know, you can keep just finding new bits and new pieces. And I don't know. I feel like that's probably why it's translated so well. And you have so many, you know, fans like me who have done the like children to adult thing where like, you know, we just, cause you just get so much out of it. And, you know, I loved seeing, you know, the cinematic Titanic, and, you know, I've downloaded a bunch of riff tracks and stuff. And like I said, my husband and I went, they screened it in LA in Burbank, at like the AMC or whatever, but the live reunion show that you guys just did with everybody was super, super awesome. Can I ask how all that ended up coming about? Just because like, as a fan, obviously it's been a dream that we've all wanted to see you all back riffing to get together again. So like, how did it happen? And then how did you guys decide for it to be riff tracks and not for the Mystery Science Theater reboot?
They asked us.
Oh, good. Good.
that's the simple answer. I got a call from Bill Corbett and he said, hey, you know, we do this thing at Sketchfest, San Francisco Sketchfest each year, where we bring a lot of people on stage and they riff with us, you know, all our pals and comedians out there. And we want to do something similar. And so we're thinking of doing it in L.A. and would you be interested? And well, why don't you do it in Minneapolis? Because we're all here except for Frank and Joel and Josh.
Right.
And it was just, you know, too easy to do. You know, it's like, well, why wouldn't I want to do that? That sounds like fun.
That's so great. I mean, it was awesome seeing you guys. I liked how you had bits and pieces. For people who haven't seen it, check it out. I'll have a link like on the episode post. But for those who did see it, like, I loved how you guys would do the sections to where like Mary Jo and, you know, like they had their section and then you and Frank had your section and then it was everyone together. Like, it was awesome because like I think it really evoked that feeling of that almost like a live version of a Mystery Science Theater show, because you had, you know, the shorts and everything. Although I will say I was disappointed you guys didn't do the Springs short because it was like the creepiest one that you guys ever do you remember that one that I'm talking about with the Springs?
Yeah, that's a great idea. That would have been
it's
a great
so
one
creepy
to do.
It's like one of the creepiest things that like it was definitely meant for children and I don't understand how that one got by. Did you see that one, Morgan? Do you know what I'm talking about? So it was like this little animated cartoon spring that was basically it was like imagining a world where no springs happened, because I can't remember the beginning, but I think it was something like the bed spring popped or something. And the dad was like, this gosh darn bed, I wish we didn't have any springs. And then this like animated cartoon pops up and is like, be careful what you wish for. Imagine a world without springs. And then it's literally like a terrifying alternate reality of a springless world where cars crash because there's no like hydraulic. It's like insane. And it's clearly meant for a kid. And like, that was a very odd tangent. But this is
a
good
one. That's a great idea. If we do another show together, I'll bring that up because that is a great idea, and that's a favorite.
It's such a favorite.
I think The Simpsons even did a riff on that.
They did. They totally did. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like Bart had wished for something, or Lisa had wished for, right? Like one of the kids, or was it Homer?
I can't
remember.
And then at some point, someone wants to kill themselves, but there's no spring in the gun. Sorry, no spring.
That's a good one. Oh, God. So we've covered a lot of stuff, you know, about Mystery Science Theater, obviously, which is great, but I'm sure that after so many years, you've probably had a million of those questions. So honestly, I have a couple of questions about, you know, sort of like Cinematic Titanic and how that came about. But then also, I'm like obsessed with Silly Rhymes for Belligerent Children. Like I got it a couple weeks ago when we were like setting all this up, and I've just kind of been reading it. And I, as someone who, you know, is trying to live her dreams and make it in the world and all of that, like, what's it like to publish a book? Like, what was that process like? Because you had gone from, you know, writing for Funny Home Videos, you know, and I know you wrote in a couple different, you know, rooms out here. Like, what was the transition like to doing a children's book even? Like, what was that like?
Well, I had these rhymes sitting in a drawer for years and years, and I didn't know what I was going to do with them. And then I ran into Len Peralta at Dragon Con.
Atlanta, what up, ATL? What?
Yeah, with a couple of weeks, we'll be there again.
Oh, nice.
And I had a different book in mind that I wanted to work on with him. And I said, well, let's see how we work together. I've got this pile of rhymes, and we can accordion the book. You know, if we hate each other, we'll make it short. If we really click, we can make it longer. And that's how that book came to be. And I didn't have a publisher. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have a Kickstarter. I just said, let's make it. So I would send these poems to Len, and he would like immediately give me drawings that were awesome. And he did the layout and the design and put it all together. And then I just found a press. I actually had it made, this press down in Missouri. So I bypassed all the stuff. Again, I didn't know what the rules were, so I didn't follow any.
But that's good. It seems like you just kind of like made them up for yourself, and then, you know, you had a book at the end. Like, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I probably should have done like self-publish, you know, an ebook or something, but I wanted a physical book that kids could hold on to.
I was going
to
say, you published this a couple years ago. I don't know if kids had tablets back then, Trace. You couldn't have predicted that one.
That's true.
Although my nephew now has a better iPad than I do, and he's 3, so that's depressing.
I know. These kids know how to do everything.
My nephew, and then also, weirdly, my 85-year-old grandfather, I've gotten schooled with technology on both of them. Like, I get my hand, like, my cell phones are hand-me-down iPhones from my grandpa when he generations up. That is not a joke. That is real life, guys. That is for real. Morgan, you're laughing,
that's
but
cool.
I have a real hip grandfather. Well, I really like the book because I think that it touches on a nerve kind of similar to, like, and the way I described it today when I came in and I was talking to Morgan and our friend David, I was like, you know, it's kind of like where the sidewalk ends if you, like, walked off the end of the sidewalk, you know? And so I, like, really like that it kind of has a vibe of, you know, whimsy, but there is that darkness to it, which is really fun. Do you subscribe to that sort of idiom of comedy having to come from a dark place? Or do you think that this was just a project that had a little bit of a dark twist that you wanted to sort of exercise?
I think that's just part of my nature. I don't intentionally set out to be dark. It's just that that's the flavor that my slurpee machine of psychosis puts out. So I wanted to write do a book that was something that I would have liked when I was a kid, and also I don't like stuff that's cute and, like, that's for kids.
It's right.
You look at some children's books and they go, wow, that is just treacly sweet.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite books recently was called Go the Fuck to Sleep. Did you hear about that book?
Yes.
Wonderful book.
I heard it read by Samuel L. Jackson.
Yes.
And that's all I want now.
Again, another reason to have kids, to read them that book.
Yeah. I don't like talking down to kids. I think they're way smarter than that. So, yeah, a little bit dark, a little, you know, there's some actual real educational stuff in there. Although I think I got one of the pet diseases wrong. I don't think your hamster can get the disease that I ascribed it, but I needed the rhyme. So
I'm hoping that, you know, a kid was the one that pointed that out to you because they were that smart that they were like, come on, Trace, hamsters can't get conjunctivitis. You should have known that. Like, I know that that's not what it was, but...
No, it was one of those, it was a scientist, and they were doing their job, I suppose. But it's like, it's a book. It's a kid's book. Come on.
So another thing, sorry, that I have to ask about, because my fandom for you actually is multi-platform. One of my favorite shows that came out last year was Other Space. It was brilliant. First of all, so thank you for being a part of it. It was so funny. I'm such a fan of the whole creative team behind it. Obviously, Paul Feig is a genius. But what was it like to go back to being a puppet again? I mean, I'm sure people have asked you that question before, but I got to know, because Art was such a great character that for me, especially as a Crow T-Robot fan, I feel like, you know, you have moments where you can kind of, like, I felt like there were moments that Art delivered that were almost a line that Crow could have delivered as well. Like, did you feel like there was, like, an emotional overlap that you brought to that character of Art, or no?
Feig was is a huge Mystery Science Theater fan.
Yeah.
And so he wrote that with me doing it in mind.
Oh, that's cool.
And I bypassed all the, you know, again, I didn't follow the rules. I bypassed all the casting people, and, you know, Feig just said, here's the guy, get him in here.
That's awesome.
So I owe a lot to Feig, both for Other Space and for Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
Which he brought me in. You know, both of these times I got a call, second time it was an email, because that's how far into the future we'd gone.
Kids were watching tablets.
And he just said, hey, do you want to be on the show? And I went, well, I'll wreck it, won't I? No, you'll be fine. Paul is one of the sweetest guys, one of the nicest guys.
He genuinely does seem so nice. I reached out to him on Twitter when I was watching the series because I was sort of like live tweeting it because that's what kids do. And the one that was like frozen, the Amish character that was like frozen and then awoken from hypersleep.
Yes.
So I tweeted at Paul and I asked him, I said, hey, was that a nod to Torgo by chance? Because in my mind, I had just assumed that that was for sure a Manos reference, right? And he was like, he tweeted back like immediately and was like, oh my God, no, it totally wasn't, but it definitely is now. And he was like, I feel like I'm just missing the creepy walking music. And I was like, oh, that's so nice that he like tweeted me back. But it was so fun to have that like fandom moment with him. You could totally see that he was also such a super fan of the show. I mean, I'm sure for him, it was such a thrill to work with you and Joel both. Like, I mean, were you as involved with puppetry of art as you were for Crow?
Well, they wanted me on the set so that I could be, interacting with the other actors. I thought, oh, it'll just be a voice job and they'll paste it in. But actually, I was on the set and there were three people that ran art. There was one fellow that was driving art, and then Sherry O'Connor, special effects artist and wife of the guy that built it, Ian O'Connor. And sometimes Ian would drive it, and sometimes another person would drive it. And then I would operate the eyebrows. And
nice.
Then his mouth was voice activated. And, you know, there's just 1,000 technical things going on in this thing. You know, all the electronics, you know, and sometimes interfering with the RF in the studio. Sometimes the audio is like, my favorite thing would be the sound guy coming in on the set and going, can we kill the robot? Because all I can hear is gears. So it was a little humbling at times.
That's really fun. Can someone kill the robot? I feel like that should have been the crew T-shirt probably for the wrap gift, right?
Yeah.
Well, do you have like a favorite memory from the show, like at all, like from the production?
We did one of the last things we shot, and Paul directed this. We did a virtual reality scene where supposedly you as the viewer are an alien on the bridge, and everybody walks in and interacts with you, you know, if you're wearing the virtual goggles.
That's cool.
So that was a ton of fun because the set was 360 degrees. Once the doors were closed, you were on a spaceship.
Yeah, I could tell from the way that the way you guys shot it, you could tell that it was a very practical set. Was it just on a soundstage, basically? Like, did you guys shoot in L.A.?
Yeah, well, we shot in Pacoima.
Nicer than L.A. God, Pacoima.
Yeah. We shot in the building that they had shot Children's Hospital.
That's cool.
I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, that's a super funny show. That's awesome. Did you guys shoot all the episodes at once?
Yeah, we shot, we shot for 6 weeks.
Oh, cool.
And then everything was destroyed. so hopefully we'll come back for a second season.
I really want that to happen. I feel like Yahoo.
I know Paul's been a little distracted with Ghostbusters. But,
I was going to say, I think I heard something about some small little indie that he had been working on. I think it just came out a couple months ago. So I think, I figured he had been busy with the show. But I know that it's got a really solid fan base. My husband and I went to a UCB Q&A like that a bunch of the guys had done, like Kieran and a bunch of the cast was there. And it was really funny because a lot of the guys have the improv background too. So I feel like they were able to just do, I mean, I'm imagining the set was pretty funny. Was any of it improv? Did you get to improv at all? Or was it a lot of it just really scripted by Paul and the writers?
It was pretty heavily scripted, but they always do like a take where people could just go off. Neil Casey is one of the funniest guys. Well, they're all great.
Hilarious and, human being, Neil Casey. Yeah, he's so funny.
Yeah, Eugene and, well, they're all in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Milana is in there, and Eugene's in there, and Karen is in there. He's the pizza, or he's the one on delivery guy.
God, they've set up so many good jokes for Eugene during the season of Other Space too. The when they set up the joke of him where his leg almost gets caught in the door, and then the next episode is when his leg gets cut off by Milana. it was just really, really well done, like, writing. I really hope you guys get a second season. It was one of the funniest things that came out last year for me, honestly. Like, I enjoyed it so much. So I really hope that happens too. Yeah. Well, hopefully everyone can collectively, like, send brainwaves or tweets to Paul after all the Ghostbusters, like, press dies down, and then we can do something for Yahoo or something. I don't know. It was so funny. And obviously to see you and Joel together, your scenes were so funny together too. Like, did you feel like it was a kind of stepping back into that comfort of performing with him again after all those years? Did you feel really similar?
Yeah, it was very strange, you know, because, again, here's a janitor and a robot.
Right.
You know, essentially a janitor, I think.
Yeah, he was engineer. Like the engineer, but he was like the burnout, so for all intents and purposes, yeah. That's awesome.
But, yeah, very surreal, and it was fun to be back in Los Angeles again, and even though we shot in Pacoima, I was staying over near Universal Studios. So, you know, just falling back in with all my old buddies, and it was very enjoyable. So, and I got to say, I've said Paul's the nicest guy. He's a very loyal guy, too. He employs his friends quite a bit. If you look at the roster of people in his films, like Dave Gruber Allen.
Yeah.
He's in Ghostbusters. He's the scary subway ghost.
That's so funny.
And Steve Banos is in there. And guys from, you know, Joel Madison was in a couple of movies ago. And
yeah.
So this whole Midwest mafia. Guys from Michigan and Minnesota and Iowa.
Having been in there for 1 year, so I moved to LA, met my soon to be husband, but at the time he was my boyfriend. You know, he was back working for a year, then I moved back to work for the company, and then we moved back to LA. So it's been a kind of a back and forth. But that year that I spent in Michigan was like enough for me to just be a part of the club. And I'm from Florida, so like I already am starting from kind of a negative point that I have to build up, because people are going to assume that I'm going to snort bath salts in front of them or something. I don't know. But like, it is real, that Midwest work ethic and like bonding together, because I have gotten more gigs and just had more good projects happen from people that have been out of like Chicago and Michigan, like Detroit. And, you know, I hear literally nothing but good things from Minneapolis. Like, I haven't been there yet, but I kind of want to go during the state fair, because I've heard a lot of things about various types of fried foods and different levels of fried foods of, you know, so I feel like that's probably when I'll decide to make the trip. But I don't want to keep you too much longer, because you've already given us almost an hour of your time so graciously. But I do want to just hit on sort of what you've been working on now, so everyone knows where they can catch you while you're on the road right now with The Mads Are Back, right, with Frank Conniff, as everyone knows, as TV's Frank. So that is, that's a live show, right? You guys go to theaters and you're basically doing a live riff as sort of just as a duo, right?
Right, it's just Frank and I in a movie, and we're not in character. We're not playing the mad scientist.
Right,
but we will be in Austin, Texas, the 25th and 26th of this month at the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, such a good theater.
We've got two shows on Thursday. That is just Frank and I. And then on the 26th, we're joining the house improv movie ripping group, Master Pancake. And we will be, it's going to be wild because the audience, the first show, it's bring your own DVD. So we don't know what they're going to bring.
That'll be fun.
And then the audience chooses. And then the second show is bring your own VHS. So that's going to be crazy.
I feel like the VHS one is the one that's going to be obviously the more nuts one because you have such more of a so much more of a catalog to go for. But I was surprised to know that they were still making VHSs up until a couple of years ago. So maybe they'll do one that's like, you know, Ocean's 11 or something. Maybe you'll get lucky and it won't be like some weird. I don't know. I feel like you'll probably have fun no matter what it is.
We're looking forward to that, whatever they throw at us. And then I mentioned Dragon Con. Frank and I will be there over Labor Day weekend. We'll be signing and selling stuff. And we also have Saturday night we'll be hosting a variety show.
Oh, fun.
A very reminiscent way. That's all I can say at this point.
All right. Well, I'm intrigued, and I will make sure to link everything for Dragon Con and for the other events as well so that people can check you out at the Draft House, too. Are you guys, you have a podcast as well, right? That's something that is not happening,
yes.
Too?
A podcast called Movie Sign with Frank Conniff, Carolina Hidalgo, and myself. And we do it out of Cave Comedy Radio in New York. And it's, I don't know when it drops each week, but it's a weekly, I think the drop day might change depending on our schedule, because sometimes we record Wednesday, sometimes Friday.
And people can find that on like iTunes or?
Yep, it's iTunes or SoundCloud or Cave Comedy Radio.
Awesome. That's so great. Is there any other... any other events you want anyone to know about, or any last minute shout outs you want to give to anybody? I don't know. Do people say shout out anymore? That's like a radio.
I've got a list of birthdays I'd like
excellent,
to go through.
Excellent. Excellent. Only if there are birthdays that Al Roker would read out. I only want super old people.
Yes. I only read people that are dead.
Excellent.
So, just freshly dead. I only read your birthday if you died today.
I like the term freshly dead. That's like, yes. Just a crisply dead person. If you've crisply died,
yes.
I will read your name.
No long-term dead. But that's about it. That covers it. I think, you know, we're follow us on the Mads Are Back Facebook page or madsareback.com.
Awesome.
And that will, any of our upcoming gigs will be posted there, I think.
Perfect. I love that. You have a website just like everyone else. That's so great. Every time I tell someone about my website, I'm always like, oh, I have a website. Like a lot of people. Like, I just never know how to end that sentence. I'm always just like, yeah. I have a website. Cool. Good for me.
I have a website, but I've never like completed it. I think all you can do there is go and order the book.
I like barely have completed mine. It's like a Wix too. So I don't even know if that counts because they basically did it for me. And then I just like slapped like the URL on it. So I feel like that's about my level of knowing how to do websites too. So don't feel bad. You're not alone in that one.
yeah. Facebook serves the function. More than anything.
Well, Facebook, and then I guess Snapchat's the new thing now, which I've been very slowly learning to snap. But like the first couple days, I just did a character that was me as if I was 80 trying to figure out Snapchat. And then I realized that slowly wasn't a character. It was just me trying to figure out Snapchat. And then I was like, oh, okay, so I'm 27 and I'm already like, I just genuinely have no idea. Like, what I have like Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and that seems like enough. Like, that's a lot of things to keep up with. So I feel like it's
Snapchat is the one that it doesn't linger. It goes away. Right?
Yeah, it goes away, and there are like filters for your face, so it's like, you know, you can be like a dog or like have like a cute flower crown on your head. You know, it's a lot of like, you know, I'm not going to lie. I do a lot of dog ones. I try to get pictures with dogs to see if it'll be a dog filter on top of a dog face, but the recognition software doesn't work that way yet. Snapchat, looking at you. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Trace. I'm glad I ended it on such a serious and relevant note.
Well, thank you, Virginia. This was fun. And will you be back at Pentacon?
I hope. I'm in Florida in October for a live event at Florida State. And then I will be at the Melbourne Film Festival later that week, because I just finished a music video. Pentacon is a hard one for me, because unless I book like a live event or have a film related project that sort of fits within the sci-fi genre, like that festival, I don't necessarily always have something that fits. So the year that we met, I had done a piece about this video game called StarCraft. And so it was perfect because, you know, it like totally fit in. But I'm working on this horror short that I'm hoping will be done soon, or, you know, even become a thing. And then that would be another reason to be there. But are you going to be in LA anytime soon?
I got no plans at this point. We've sort of avoided LA for some reason. We're playing everywhere else, but not LA.
Well, so, I'll check your schedule, because if you guys are coming outside of, you know, or coming to Southern California at all or anything, I'd love to come to a live show, obviously, and say hey in person and stuff.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Thank you so much. This was just, it was such a dream. And honestly, like, I don't want to be too effusive to make you uncomfortable, but this was really just genuinely like your comedy in particular, and the work that you have done over the past two decades of at least my lifetime, and being, you know, aware enough to know what jokes are, it was just a thrill and honor to interview you, because really the show in particular has just meant so much to me, my sister, you know, my husband. It was really such a reason that my husband even got to marry me, because he knew that I liked the show and used it as like a pickup line super early on when we were dating, because he was smart. So I just wanted to say thank you again, because it was such a thrill. So thank you for taking the time.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And let's do it again when I have something new to talk about.
Anytime, seriously. Anytime you want to like pimp yourself out, just give your girl a call.
All righty.
All right, Trace, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks a lot. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.